It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
So, I assume you noticed I'm all aglow now.
Yeah, very well backlit.
Yeah. But that's emanating from me.
Oh, from the back of you?
All of them. I'm glowing.
You're glowing.
I'm not pregnant. Don't even get started there. As we know, I'm on vacation, and that's given me a lot of time to ponder and meditate. And I think I just achieved enlightenment. I think that's what's going on.
Mm.
I'm pretty enlightened now. So
there's going to be little statues made of you, Buddha statues. And
I mean, that's up to the people. But I will be glowing and...
up to the people.
What's the word? Pontificating, I think is the word.
Oh, you're going to pontificate. Okay. Like that's never happened before.
That's what people in my position do.
Well, what do you call your pontificating before you were enlightened?
I didn't. That's the key part to enlightenment, is knowing when you're pontificating.
All those other times didn't count.
You wouldn't understand.
No, I definitely would not understand.
No. hello, everyone. Welcome. Won't you to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world where one of the hosts is enlightened and the other one is stuck in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Tony, but you already knew that.
I'm William, and this is episode 709.
Yeah, he's whatever.
Yeah.
For those of you just joining us, neither of us are where we usually are. You're at least technically in your house. I am on vacation.
Yeah, I am in my house.
I am in Cape Mears, Oregon. But forget all of that. We have a hat. It's magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People sometimes, not right now, but sometimes, email into that email address with whatever the crap they want. And the hat, because it is magic, can magically on its own forward those emails to us and we'll read them. We don't have any. So that's why I'm on vacation. There were no emails to do. They were like, it's a good time. So here I am. Peter's Donuts. All right. Let's give you the quick tour. Only going to give you the tour of the ground floor because the steps are very narrow and difficult to navigate, even when you are not holding on to a laptop and a webcam at the same time. So I think for the next time, Trish and I are going to do an episode, and then one of us will be upstairs and they can show everybody. But I will show you what's down here. All right. So I'm not getting up though. So, out there, that is, I believe, Cape Mears Lake. Not to be confused with the Pacific Ocean that is just past it. Or Tillamook Bay, which is off in that direction. So, we are surrounded by three different bodies of water.
Mm.
But there's a beach, like, right over there, we could actually get to the ocean, but this is a little lake here, and then the way we drive through is a big bay. So I think it all is the same water. because they're all connected. Despite being a lake, it's connected to the bay. So
oh, okay.
And that's the dining room table and another couch. And you can see in the back there is all the kitchen. It's an elaborate kitchen setup. And then there's the crazy stairs, which goes up into a whole room. The bedroom up there, and of course the bathrooms are isolated, but by and large, it's all one giant room, sort of. It's good for us. I think I would start to get a little annoyed with a bunch of people. Because, yeah, you're always up in somebody's business, given that most of the house is all one open space.
Well,
It's
looks
handy for us.
nice.
We can just yell stuff down to the other person. When I was unpacking, I just dropped stuff from up above. Yeah, so that's where we are here.
Yep, looks nice.
Yeah, it's been a good trip so far. We had good times with my family.
Good.
A lot of talking, a lot of eating. That tends to be what we do with my family. And now we're just here and we're chilling out, checking around the area. At this point, this is our third morning waking up here, I believe. Maybe it's our fourth. I don't know. It's a long time, but right, get here. Also, shout out to proper fans of Botan rice candy. Botan rice candy is the best. Those of you who grew up with it, go to the blog and tell me about it, themagictalkinghead.com. If you didn't grow up with Botan rice candy, your parents were bad.
Is it? Do you get any kind of special feeling being so much closer to the Pacific? I mean, you kind of grew up over there. I just don't know if you have any
No.
attachment. No?
I love the ocean. And I love going to the ocean. We went to the beach yesterday. We went to the beach that has a tunnel going through the mountain. And it's the only way to get to the other beach unless the tide is really low. And it was very weird going under that tunnel, and there was just like this whole mountain, like houses of crab on top of you. It felt very strange. But no, I don't get any like deep tingly feeling inside or anything. It's nice though. I like the ocean and I like the Pacific Ocean better. It looks cooler than the Atlantic. The Atlantic's very boring. I don't know. My experience with the Atlantic has almost entirely been Virginia Beach. And Virginia Beach is a very just flat sandy beach and it's great for swimming. It's not particularly exciting. Pacific, we got rocks and shit. That's cool. So how's your week been back in real civilization?
Okay. Nothing really, going on or anything interesting to report. I mean, we watched some movies and TV shows and stuff, but I can't think of anything that's worth really talking about. So, just
Well,
usual thing here.
that's bad because we have an hour to kill.
This time of year, October is we get out a lot because we like to be out in the changing leaves and stuff. So we've been doing that. The fall season for me starts at August in the fair season, and then in September we do stuff around the equinox, and there's my sister's birthday, which is always a big deal, really close to that. And then October with the leaves changing, and we go to a pumpkin patch and all that stuff. So we're kind of getting at the end of that long season, and then when the Halloween's over, then we kind of transition to winter and Christmassy and New Year's and that. So this is we're mostly focusing on getting outside and doing stuff, but over here it's actually been hot still, like
It's
muggy,
been really hot.
not comfortable at all. So it's not been very fun to get outside. So, but that's our focus is really being outdoors and not so much indoors, which again, there's not much to talk about there except how beautiful the leaves are as they're changing, and usually how nice it is to go outside and walk in a cool, windy forest and stuff, but it's not been that. It's been hot,
Did you
muggy.
get pumpkins?
We will get them, but probably next week. Like
All right.
a week from, we're recording on a Friday, a week from now, we'll probably be going to the pumpkin patch the day after. So a little over a week.
I'll be flying on a plane that day.
So yeah, what's been going on with you? I mean, you're on vacation, obviously, but do you still consume media?
So much media. So much. And that's before we left, we saw a bunch of stuff. Yeah, there's a lot. All right. But first, I'd like to talk to you all about something special to me. I found a new musical group that I really like.
Oh.
That I think some of you might like, and you might already be listening to in some cases. As is often the case these days, I was listening to a group I already know and like doing a collaboration with some other people. And I was like, they're awesome. Tell me more. So this is how I discovered the band called Polyphia. P-O-L-Y-P-H-I-A. Polyphia. This band, according to what the internet says, used to be a heavy metal band, but now they're more a prog rock band. None of the people have changed, none of the instruments have changed, just apparently their style. Now we think they're prog rock more than metal. I don't know. It all sounds pretty cool to me. The big thing is the band consists of a pretty darn good drummer, a really good six-string electric bass player, and two phenomenal eight-string guitar players, of which I did not know eight-string guitars were a thing, but apparently there are. And they make extensive use of what Wikipedia calls virtuosic guitar playing. In that they just do just crazy stuff with the guitar. It's really amazing. A lot of their stuff, because it is instrumental, starts to sound similar, so it's often sort of background music, but they do a lot of collaborations with a lot of other talented people, so we're checking out. But I think you might be interested in it. I think Ashtalen might be interested in it. I don't know about other people, but I've been getting into them. I discovered them because the two guitarists collaborated with Baby Metal, who I have talked about on here before.
How did you spell it again? P.
P O L Y. P H I A. I know the two guitar players are named Scott LePage and Tim Henson. Not sure about the other two. They've been around for a while. They got about four studio albums. That's good stuff. So,
okay,
check that out. We are in the process of rewatching Hill House for the first time.
Oh,
and that's very interesting because now that I'm not like scared and jumpy, I can sort of, and I know what's happening. In a broader sense, I can sort of pay attention to individual character portrayals and stuff.
Yeah.
We'll see. We're only a couple episodes in, but it was Trish's idea. She wanted to go for it.
We, as you know, we watched that again. We haven't watched any of the other Flanagan things again, and maybe we won't. We have done before, but I am kind of interested in watching Usher again because I've only watched it once, and I feel like I'd have a different take on it the second time through.
Usher might be my favorite after Hill House. I really like that. But I haven't rewatched it either.
Well, maybe we should put a priority on that. It's fun when you find something that you enjoy watching. You know, because I'm kind of like you. I don't typically watch things more than once. I don't typically read books more than once. Nonfiction I have. And it's not because I don't like it. It's because, yeah, I got what I want, you know. Wanted or needed out of that. I don't really need to see it again. There are things like I've seen Star Wars and Star Wars movies 1,000 times, but mostly because of other people, not so much because I wanted to watch it that many times.
Other people being George Lucas who keep
releasing. No, like my brother Scott watched it a lot, and I liked watching it with him, and I liked watching it with the kids. So I mean, I it's not that I didn't want to watch it. It's that had I not had had it not been for, oh, I want to watch it with you, I don't know if I would have watched it all that many times.
That's how I am with porn. I don't actually watch a lot of porn, except a lot of people want me to watch porn with them. So it's a bonding time.
You know, another thing is, maybe you're like this. I remember things pretty well that I see in a movie, right? So like, I don't like I'll be sitting with someone who's seen a movie dozens of times, and we can go back with quotes and everything. And I'll only have seen it once. So, I mean, that's not true for every movie I see, but for movies I really like, if I only see it once, I can remember large parts of it just fine. I don't have to watch it.
I think that's part of why I do less rewatching, but also there's only so long that can hold up. I'm trying to adjust nowadays because my memory's not what it used to be, and it's not going to get better.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm that way too right now, for sure. For sure.
I don't even remember who you are, and we just started this like less than 20 minutes ago.
I mean, that's why we're still friends, because you keep forgetting who I am.
Yes, just as I remember. Oh, and I get hit on the head again. I don't know how it happens.
I'm not going to tell.
We are watching a show we don't know if we like yet.
Oh.
A while back, AMC made a deal with Netflix, and they put a bunch of AMC stuff on Netflix. And this means very little to me, because in general, I don't touch AMC TV, because it always makes me feel bad.
Yeah, you said that.
Trish decided she wanted to check out the show Kevin Can Fuck Himself.
Mm. Yeah, I've heard of that.
We had kind of in the beginning heard about it, but we weren't sure. So the show is focused on a woman, and she is married to a guy named Kevin. And basically, there's a style of sitcom that was very popular in the 90s and the 2000s, especially, where a basically kind of doughy looking man child of a character is married to an unusually attractive woman.
Mm.
And the whole sitcom is about their family life. It is typified by basically everything Kevin James has done on television. Which the show is a play on words of Kevin Can Wait, which is a sitcom he was in. But Jim Belushi had one of these sitcoms. The sitcom Still Standing was based around this concept. And this idea that these main character guys, who are basically idiots, can fuck up, and then their long-grieved wife, who is, again, so out of their league, comes in and cleans everything up, and it's become quite a trope. So this show assumes this woman is in one of these sitcoms, to the degree that when her husband is in the same location as her, it changes to an on-video multicam sitcom full with soundtrack. Laugh track going on. But whenever she's not in the room with him, it turns to a film shot, single camera, and just in general sort of darker in a way. And the story appears to be her finally getting sick of this and trying to sort of find a life outside of this. And it's a really clever idea. It's very interesting to watch how it plays out, because the dialogue shifts to very sitcom-y dialogue during those scenes. And certain other characters just are different, sort of, when they're not in that kind of scene with them. And it's a really clever device. It is very... the show is a comedy drama, and not all the comedy comes from the sitcom segments. And so it is very, I find it very compelling, and I very much still want to watch it. I don't know if I like it. And it feels like, for whatever, I'm working on sort of changing the line of what I'm comfortable with and what boundaries I'm going to push. This is right on the line. Like this show is easily one, at any given moment, one episode away from me being done. Because it's still an AMC show, but it's so original and clever, and it got 2 seasons. I don't know. At least that, maybe it's still running. I don't know. But so we'll see it. But it's interesting. It's on Netflix, if anybody wants to see that. So what movies have you seen?
Last night we saw a movie called Oddity.
Hey, that's on my list too.
We thought it was good. I don't know if it's for everybody. I mean, it's not. It wasn't. It was very well made, and it was fun to watch. I'll just put it like that for us. And it was, good fare for this time of year if you're into kind of creepy movies in the season. I don't think there was anything groundbreaking or shattering about it, but it was like, yeah, that was very competently done and kind of fun to watch. Yeah, we both liked it. I mean, I wouldn't put it in the same category as like watching Hill House or something like that, but it was worth watching, I think.
We liked it. So we're like, oh, it's fine. Yeah, it was a good time. Whatever. But then it has also stuck with us a little bit. And we've talked about it on occasion afterwards and stuff. I think it is grow. I liked it at the time. I think it is growing in fondness. It is an Irish horror film that is just it's confusing to say the premise. So, woman while renovating an old manor house or even castle, maybe, I don't know, where she and her husband are gonna live out in the middle of nowhere, gets murdered. A year later, the dude that we think murdered her shows up dead. Or sorry, not a year later, shortly after, the prime suspect ends up dead, and we don't know how. And then a year later, her blind twin sister, who collects cursed objects, comes to visit the husband and his new girlfriend at the spooky house, and spooky things happen. She's a blind psychic woman who collects cursed objects. And she's played by the same actor as the woman who died originally, because they're twins. And yeah, it's creepy. It's interesting. Yeah, it's good. I don't think it's breaking any huge molds, but it's well produced, well acted, and
Yeah,
a spooky fun time.
it's a good story. The whole thing with the woman, the blind woman who sells cursed objects or whatever. That's not the selling cursed objects or collecting cursed objects or whatever. That's not a new idea, obviously. But the design of her shop and her whole thing, it's like, I like this. This would be if the filmmakers who made this like had other stories and like the setup for the story was someone visiting her shop and buying something and then they told the rest of that story. That would be interesting. That would be a fun film anthology if these people made something like that and this character in her shop was kind of the backbone of the whole thing. That'd be kind of fun.
I will say I'm not sure. Her ability to navigate around places, especially places she doesn't know, was kind of inconsistent in a way that I'm not. To her credit, she never looked at the camera, which was good. Good when you're pretending to be blind, but Her level of functionality seemed to vary wildly in the same situation.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was very credible how familiar she was with places that she knew. I think sometimes that's a thing that when people are portraying, when sighted people are portraying blind people, they kind of get wrong, that a blind person can get very familiar with the surroundings they're used to. But as you said, when she was in surroundings that she shouldn't have been used to, sometimes she was also a little too capable.
The bulk of the movie, she's somewhere she's never been, and sometimes you can tell that, and sometimes she really moves around like it's her home. But to be fair, it's all spookums, so maybe that's part of it. I don't know. It wasn't overly distracting, just somebody with my pedantic brain. All right, let's talk about important one here. We watched. Well, we watched a few things, but let's get this. We finally saw the original Psycho.
Oh boy, you watched it? I didn't think you were going to be interested in that.
I didn't know if I was either, especially because it's one of those where you know all the things about it. Excuse me. Been drinking a lot of Mountain Dew this morning. So I get why it's a classic. I can understand why that would blow your so much about that would blow your mind when it came out, especially if you didn't know what was going on beforehand. It is competently produced and all that, and if you don't know how the story goes, wow. But because I did know all of that, in a lot of ways it was like we were seeing it for the second time, because we knew all the twists, and I knew enough to know like the point at which the story becomes not the story you're expecting and all that kind of stuff. So in some ways it's like we were watching it for a second time. And I'm sure there are a lot of very good film craft reasons why it's super impressive, and there are some really neat shots. It doesn't do a lot for me if you know what's coming. One very notable exception, Anthony Perkins' performance is amazing in a way I did not know he was capable of. And now, having done this backwards, having watched some of Bates Motel and now seeing the original, Freddie Highmore is doing an Anthony Perkins impression in a way. Like, he has that exact. I absolutely believe that's the same guy. And I didn't know that when I saw Freddie Highmore in Bates Motel that he was doing that until I saw a insanely young Anthony Perkins, and he's just, I believe everything about his character in a very serious way. And so that was very cool to see and worth the price of admission. I got bored. I mean, I get it, I guess, but maybe it's a little bit like the Beatles, like such an important, influential movie. People have moved on. I don't know.
Well, editing is different than it used to be. Back in the day, back in Hitchcock's day, it wasn't unusual to have a shot where it's like 5, 6 seconds of a car driving down the road to park and someone get out of it. These days they don't edit like that.
No.
A shot like that does not build tension. It does not establish anything. The audience in back in the day would sit and they watch that happen, then they just very patiently let the pace of the film sort of unfold in front of them. And these days people just expect the editing to clip along a lot better. And I'm just using that car thing as an example. There's lots of other examples and scenes where the camera will stay just a little too long on someone's face in a close-up, or just little thing maybe that people don't notice, maybe that people don't think about. But also, you you can't get by with a smaller number of angles. Like if you're shooting a conversation or if you're shooting a scene and you've got one camera angle, there had better be something artistic about it. Like it's really wide or it's super long or it's part of a long shot or something like that. And if there isn't, people expect.
Or your whole premise is a movie over the course of millions of years taking place from exactly one camera angle.
Whatever it is.
Your Richard Linklater.
But if you don't have an artistic, what's going to be obvious to the audience, an artistic reason to have that one angle through the whole scene, people are going to get bored. They're going to want to look, have a close up, a medium close up, you know, the one person, both people, you know, the people want the camera. They want the scenes to change or else they're going to think, what's going on here? Why are we watching this person walk for a whole block? Like Halloween, for example. Is edited in the old way, and it feels like a plodding, not exciting, not a tense movie at all. And nobody would edit that or shoot that way anymore.
And you say people don't know about this, but if you watched any Mystery Science Theater or Riff Tracks, you're very aware of this because they constantly make fun of like, oh, yeah, we got to see the entire parking job, but we'll never know if they successfully got the car parked.
Right, right.
Can't see how they got from one place to another if we don't see the entire highway journey.
So then that raises the question, how did this happen? Did someone who was innovating editing sort of retrain the audience to expect quicker, more stuff going on? Or did the audience change and demand that kind of editing because people were clearly getting bored from the old way? I don't know which came first, or maybe neither one came first and they sort of organically influenced each other. I suspect, though, it was someone did the innovative editing first, or like action movies were doing editing like that. And then audiences, or maybe the case is that the people who are most likely to go to the theater are the people that enjoy that kind of movie. And so they influence the editing, maybe. I don't know.
If stay silent, he's just going to finish out the hour all by himself.
Why do you think you know why that changed?
I don't. I can't even come up with a good joke for it. I'm confident film students do.
Well, sure, you know,
a movie that is the first one.
Programming for children is often boom, 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 really fast, right?
Yes.
So I don't know if that influenced it or what, but there's definitely something that changed how things were edited. And yeah, maybe it was multiple things influencing each other, but now all those old movies seem really slow and plodding when they first came out.
So this is going to sound like a joke, but it maybe isn't even a joke. Cocaine.
I don't know.
Like, there was a time period where most successful screenplays were very obviously and historically confirmed written on cocaine. So maybe they were like, no, it's too hard. Come on. No luck.
Yeah, I don't know.
If not, it's a funny joke.
Television. Television could have impacted it because
people were on a lot of television back then. They were doing television while they were writing. They were doing television at parties.
No, I mean,
go in the bathroom, do a bump of television.
A lot of TV by necessity had to be a faster paced, you know, and maybe, you know, and when they put, that's another thing, when they put movies on TV and reformatted them, there were a lot of things that had to be done. First of all, you had to change the aspect ratio, right? You had to do things with bad language or whatever. But I think they also found in that transition that they had sometimes to do other types of editing to make it television that people would watch and not turn the channel on. And maybe that eventually impacted how they made movies to begin with. I don't know.
So how come you never went to film school?
So I took classes in filmmaking at the University of Iowa. That was a weird experience for me because the first class I took seemed really basic.
You found out that cameras won't take your soul.
No.
Because in Melcher, Dallas, it was a commonly held.
So I when I took my first film class at the University of, I mean, I think I took, well, maybe I just took the one. I was the only person in the film class who wasn't at that point thinking of being a filmmaker. I was just interested in it. I was a sociology major. I didn't really intend to go into filmmaking, but this class also taught television production and radio production. But the class was very basic. There was very little that they taught that I didn't already know and that I maybe hadn't already done. Some of it I'd already actually done. And I was a little surprised that the people around me, everybody else in these classes, were going into this. This was their major. They were going into this as a living, and they were surprised by what I thought were pretty basic. For example, I think I was the only person in the class who knew that when you watch a TV show or even certain movies, and there's a scene, that scene was shot over several takes with different camera angles, and then it was all cut together and it edited. Well, I knew that before I took the class, but pretty much nobody else in that class who thought of themselves as like real film and TV buffs, you know, and like, this is what I'm going to do for a living. This is what I want to do for the rest of my life. But for some reason they didn't know how that worked or that's how it was done.
These are nerds. The cool kids do sociology.
No, it's just it gets back to what has always been an issue for me personally and people interacting with me is I always assume that if I know something, I was the last person to know it. It speaks to the whole thing with, like, you know, the biggest criticism of me when I was a manager was people said I used words that they didn't know. I used big words or whatever, and people thought I was trying to impress somebody, or I thought I was smarter than everybody else. But I have never used a word in my life that I didn't think everybody else in the world knew, and I learned it last. I've never thought of myself as being better or smarter than anyone else. But people think I think that because sometimes I'm surprised when they don't know something. And if I mention that in any way, they think I'm trying to put them down or show off.
And it's true, you don't know any cool stuff, but you know all the nerd shit before everybody else.
Well, and I don't think I'm, even when I realized my classmates didn't know these things, I didn't think I was better or smarter than them. The only reason it surprised me was because if anyone outside of that class had asked me, well, how do you know that, Bill? I would have said, well, just because it interests me, right? You know a lot of stuff I don't know because it interests you. But these are people who, when I talked to them before the class, seemed as interested and knowledgeable about specific pop cultural, you know, things as I was. But apparently they just didn't, you know, get into the minutia of it, which, again, that didn't make me better or smarter or anything. And they could learn it just as quickly as I did. But I was just surprised that someone that passionate about the medium and the stuff didn't show interest into deeper things. Technical things.
I think I speak for most people when I say, if we had the chance to get into the sociologist clique when we were in school, we would have taken it. They're the coolest, but they're very exclusive about it. So
I've learned,
no shame in accepting the invite.
What I've learned is my interests have always been weirder than I thought they were. Is what
it comes everything to. Has always been weirder.
But
all weird.
The dark side of that is people think I think I'm smarter than them or better than them or whatever, and I certainly do not. I don't think that at all. I just am surprised that something I know isn't common knowledge, because the fact is I don't think of myself as a smart person. So therefore I don't think of anything I know as being smart.
You're very much not.
Okay, well, that's what I think. But, so nothing I know is smart or brilliant or special at all. Yes, I never have thought that.
No. See, here's the problem. You keep thinking, well, if I know it, everybody knows it.
No, because I'm dumb.
If you know it, no one else knows it. And if you don't know it, all of us know it. So that's it.
That's how it really goes. Okay.
Yes. You should just know that your knowledge level isn't with anybody else, which on one level is sad because you should never speak to anybody about things you know because none of the rest of us know it. But on the other hand, is very useful, because if you are ever uncertain or do not know something, you can ask literally anyone, because the rest of us know. So
Yeah.
the bad news is you're very emotionally isolated from literally the whole world. But the good news is you're like a little baby to the rest of us, and we all could just help you anytime you fall in a puddle or anything.
I pay attention to different things is what than the other people do. That's what it comes down to.
Stuff
And
that nobody else even knows is real.
no,
But meanwhile, you
I don't.
don't pay attention to how to dress yourself.
Well, this is what I'm saying. The things I pay attention to, even film buffs didn't really care about until they had to,
Exactly.
right?
No,
So
it's
like
yes.
I don't notice and pay attention to important things, at least not to everybody else. They're not important. They're important to me, of course, but they're not important to anybody else. So
No,
it's
no way.
useless. My knowledge is
Yes.
totally useless.
Yes,
I'm useless,
now you
really.
understand. Yes. But you will never, as
Oh,
long as you are willing to ask the rest of us for help, you will survive because we know all the stuff you don't know.
yeah, that's right. That's how it works.
You're gonna
But
get a single room with
in the
your
meantime,
and a
in the
lock
meantime,
on the outside.
in the meantime, a lot of people get mad at me and dislike me and hate me and think I'm an arrogant ass and stuff. And it's like, well, I'm not. I just,
I mean, I do,
a lot of people
but
do.
I've only gotten to know you for a while, so maybe that's part of what it is. All right, now we're going to talk about California Sweet.
California, what?
Sweet.
What's that?
I don't know, it sounds like a new brand of carrots. It is, in fact, a movie from
Oh, movie.
1979. Based on a play by Neil Simon that then Neil Simon wrote into a movie that Trish and I watched. The suite in California Suite is SUITE, not SWEET. So it's not about carrots. It is about a hotel in Beverly Hills, California, in which four vignettes happen that are all tied to the same hotel room, I think. They're really unrelated. It's very weird because, as I said, there are four stories going on sort of simultaneously, and two of them were quite interesting and entertaining, and two of them were really awful. And so it's very confusing. Firstly, it's also an amazing cast, though. Unbelievable cast. I'll start with the good ones. Alan Alda and Jane Fonda are a couple who have divorced, and they are meeting up at this hotel. One of them lives in LA, one of them doesn't, to discuss some issues involving their 17-year-old daughter. And that is difficult to deal with because they're very abrasive sort of characters, but you quickly sort of figure out that's the point. And it's very interesting, and the performances are incredibly compelling from the two of them. So it's very interesting. Next is a 30-something Maggie Smith and her equally young husband, Michael Caine, show up in LA because she's been nominated for an Oscar for some silly comedy she did. And so they're coming and attending the awards and everything like that. And they're fun. They just sort of yammer at each other and banter, and it's a really good time. It's just really fun to see a very young Maggie Smith and Michael Caine, and they have such great chemistry. There is more to their story that's sort of tragic and things like that, but again, don't want to spoil it, but it's very good. Then we have Walter Matthau flying in for his nephew's bar mitzvah, but he's coming in a day ahead of his wife because apparently his wife gets concerned that they shouldn't fly on the same plane because of the kids. So, like, the plane goes down, they have no parents, so they fly on separate planes. So he's there, and his brother-in-law, Stans Bornak, I don't know the actor's name, but he's the one who played Stan Zbornak in The Golden Girls, and he's been in everything forever. We all recognize him. I don't know his name. I just think of him as Stan Zbornak from The Golden Girls, Dorothy's ex-husband. But anyway, he's there, and he takes him out, Walter Matthau out, and they get super drunk, and then he surprises Walter Matthau in his room with a prostitute that apparently is a good time, but drinks so much tequila that she's passed out in the bed the next morning when the wife arrives at the hotel, and hijinks ensue, and it's pretty dumb. It's not a great time. And then there is a section in which two doctors who are friends go on vacation with their two significant others, and hijinks ensue. And it is most notable that the two doctors are played by Bill Cosby and Richard Pryor, who, personal life aside and horrific things, were at the height of their comedic chops at this point. And it was awful. It was so bad, and I'm sorry I saw it, and I'm sorry it exists. Like, the whole premise is the two of them are the worst people in the world and awful to each other, and then just a lot of physical comedy that's not very funny. Like, it was, I was very excited. I was like, holy crap, Bill Cosby and Richard Pryor in this? Holy crap, they're in the same section of it? Holy crap, this is awful. I hate it. So, and I even looked it up. I think the play was a little more subtle in some of these and it made more sense. But so, yeah, it was very weird. On paper, it should have been knocked out of the park, but it was real mixed. But the good parts were really good. They were a little front loaded, which sucked. The more annoying parts were mostly near the end. Yeah, if people are into that old-timey kind of stuff, which I am, and like to see really, it was really fun to see vivacious young Maggie Smith, given she just died at 89. And this was, yeah, I think I did the math. She was like 34 or something when this came out, so that was pretty cool. We got more. I haven't gotten around to all of them yet. I guess I'm not recording with you, so I can hit some of these up. I have, since we have spoken, so I think I told you I was gonna watch the Nightmare on Elm Street and the Friday the 13th movies, but they were gone from anything I could stream for free. But I was hoping once spooky season would kick in, somebody would grab a hold of them. It's too big of a waste otherwise. And so, sure enough, October 1st, almost all of the Friday the 13th, except maybe like Jason X or whatever, is on Shudder. And I think Max has all the Nightmare on Elm Streets. But it's somewhere available now. So I've been messing with those. Trish has been watching some. So I have now, so far, done the first four Friday the 13th. Yeah. I'm cruising. I got to the Corey Feldman one. There, the fourth one has a very young Corey Feldman doing a remarkable job. It's a good actor, or was a good actor. They're all not good. I mean, they're all. I think you can almost watch the slasher genre forming around these. Like, there are ones before that are bigger, like Black Christmas is arguably the progenitor, and then Halloween was what made it a thing, and all this. But a lot of like the dumb slasher tropes and people doing silly things and making bad decisions all comes out of this right here. The first one was not as bad as I expected. And I don't know why. It was slow and boring, or something. The performances, a lot of which were by people who did almost nothing afterwards, and some of which were by Kevin Bacon. They felt real-ish in a way that I don't know. I found myself vaguely interested. It wasn't great, but I wasn't super bored, which I more expected. The second one had a lot more characters and a lot more subplots and a lot more going on, and I was bored to tears in that one. I don't really know why. The third one was some nonsense focused on everything's in 3D, which is funny. So they had a lot of stuff jump out at you, but a lot of it was special effects done with very visible wires. Like in weird ways. Like there's one where a snake jumps out and they clearly had wire like put inside, and so they pull it taut and the snake comes up. But you can see like the snake jumps at you with like four wires sticking out of its mouth. It's very weird. Tom Savini did most of the special effects on the early ones, which sometimes makes sense and sometimes doesn't, because he's really good and some of the effects are really good, but some of the effects less so. But I guess he was still figuring it out. And yeah, and then the fourth one's kind of fun again. It's weird. Oh, also, it has Crispin Glover in it. And I looked it up, and Crispin Glover did a lot of like coming of age, like sex comedies and dramas and teen horror and stuff around this time.
Yeah,
Like right before Back to the Future, he was in a lot of these.
when he was in Back to the Future, people who knew who he was actually thought it was a little weird that he was in that in Back to the Future, because it seemed to be out of, out of step
Yeah.
with what he was usually did. I remember that.
But because I didn't know him, I think of his career from that point on, and he's this weird, eccentric actor or whatever. And now I'm like, oh no, but he spent a lot of time playing generic crap. And in this one, he's just the saddest, horniest of dudes. It's he and another guy are sort of the comic relief in a really annoying way. Yeah, it's very odd. But it wasn't that bad of a episode. So yeah, making my way through those. I'll probably hit up Friday the third or Nightmare on Elm Street 2 soon. I know it's such a departure, so I don't know. But it is interesting to watch them and see, like, I'm at the point now where I'm like, this is where it starts to get silly. This is where it's a franchise. Like the first one was kind of a creative idea, and the second one kind of built on it. And then by the third one, we're just, and I know before too long here, it's just going to be, oh, lightning struck, and now Jason's alive again. Like, it's going to get sillier, but we're working on it. All right. It's probably about time. I got a vacation to be on. So, please give us things to e email us about something, because we can't have this. This isn't good. I know I'm enlightened and all, but. So the magical talking hat at gmail.com. Give us stuff to talk about, or else you're just gonna hear about more Friday the 13th movies. Also, go to the blog to magicaltalkinghat.com. Tell us what you're watching for spooky season. I think because it is easier with scheduling, Trish and I are gonna do the next episode. So by the time that airs, we'll almost be home. And you get a week off to work your shit out and learn about the basics of functioning. Get all that filmmaking stuff out of your head. I hope you all are having a good vacation. I know I am.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, Visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.